reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, everybody. It is that time of the week. It is your favorite Tuesday of Pedal Week, the best Tuesday of Pedal Week. It is really, truly a great Tuesday, right? Welcome to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Little John. Joining
and
me
Matt
in studio,
Dixon, as usual.
As usual, right? Mm-hmm. Only because on rare occasion you're off like hunting or vacationing or something
like that. Yeah.
It's okay. I've done it too, and thankfully you've got my back. So awesome.
We're both here today and we're ready for this.
Yeah, an interesting show that so I got to share with you guys just a quick story here. I fell down a rabbit hole over the weekend.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah, how deep was the hole?
Bottomless.
Did you ever hop your way out?
No. I'm still rattling around. So it was the rabbit hole of starting to really get into the weeds of how AI operates.
Okay.
And I'm just scratching the surface. So I'm not talking about like how the large language models or the different training concepts function. That's not what I mean. Like how it is learning, but how it is being utilized and how it is developing and what it is doing. And very candidly, there are things that it is absolutely changing in real time.
Oh,
right. And so it's fascinating. It got me thinking, because there's comments out there like, well, you know, the next 6 to 12 months, half the people are going to lose their jobs, right? I think that's probably a little exaggerated.
Yeah, definitely over 6 months. Like, it can't, it's not, I don't
yeah,
think it's
7 months maybe, but six, come on.
Maybe six right? years.
Well, it's definitely going to change the way things happen, mm-hmm. right? And so it really got me thinking, though, about how is AI going to change the investment landscape? And we've kind of talked about this before, but I just feel more armed recently with just new data and watching the speed at which this is growing. I have to tell you, there are a couple of major disruptions in my career, right? The first one was the internet, right? You know, I was graduating from college, it was the 90s, and the internet was just really starting to proliferate. And what you saw was the decimalization of the stock market, and then you saw the proliferation of online discount brokers, and then the democratization of information, and now the speed of information, right? And then we saw this big transition in like 2008 or 9 to the appification of the internet, right? Everything started becoming apps on phones. And now I think we're seeing another huge iteration, which is this proliferation of artificial intelligence, right? AI. And so far, it doesn't appear to be Skynet,
mm-hmm.
right? So far, and it's interesting if you are sort of an AI theorist, that what's the probability that it become, you know, we reach the singularity and AI becomes self-aware and decides to destroy all humans because they're in the way, versus what if AI decided that it became self-aware and was like, all right, well, humans are just another thing to kind of, you know, manage, but they're relatively useful for us. And so we don't need to wipe them out. We just kind of need to keep making discoveries and figure out how to get them to sort of play nice.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right? And between now and then, we got a long way to go, but it's accelerating quick. And so the question is, first, let me ask you a super loaded question, Matt.
Yeah.
Are we as advisors still relevant in 3 years?
I think so, because one of the things is, like, when it comes to AI, right? Like, it might be able to make faster decisions, but it's not always the best decision. And we've seen it so many times recently where AI is getting things wrong. It's learning from humans.
It hallucinates, right? That's
yeah.
one of the things.
And like, I'll ask it a question and I know that the response I got was wrong. And so I'll be like, are you sure about that? And then it's like, oh, recalibrating, rethinking. Yeah, no, that's not it. Right. And so like,
my favorite example, by the way.
Did I?
Well, you're the one that told me AI is like a lazy teenager.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was your language, right?
It's true.
And I've borrowed it forever. Help our listeners. What? Explain it to our listeners.
Right. Well, think about it. So if you're a computer and you have to run an analysis based on what someone puts in, right? Someone could be open-ended and it asks you to do this crazy outlandish thing. And if you just always did what it said, you would have to consume tons of power, tons of resources.
Yeah. Solve world peace.
Yeah, and so it's like, give me like 20 hours of computation to solve that problem, right? And so it would just, what it's doing is it's defaulting to giving you the best answer that it can that uses the least amount of power possible, right?
Aha. Uh-huh. I actually really love this thematic understanding, right? I don't know why I called it that. I do know why I called it that. If you're listening, consider for a moment that every answer is designed to be power efficient.
It is.
Right?
100% is, right? Yeah. Because it's costing them money to give you the thing that you're asking for. And so someone pays that bill.
This is so genius, by the way. If folks do not latch onto this concept, I think you're missing a huge thing. And I'm surprised how little it's discussed.
It's not talked about.
Right. It's just like, oh, it's just tokens. And, you know, this is just what we go and do. And it's, you know, you got to ask it and ask better questions and whatnot. Well, no, what you're really doing is prompting it so specifically that it can't find a way to be lazy.
I'll give you proof.
Okay.
Proof in the pudding. We have a paid version of ChatGPT.
Our
right?
office does.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so we're literally paying for it where a lot of people aren't. Right. So we mm-hmm. get kind of a priority tier. We get a higher tier than some other people do. And I have really, on a couple occasions, pushed ChatGPT to the limit because I needed code and I was asking for very specific things. And I told it, you don't get to be lazy. You've got to answer these questions like all the way through. And I pushed on it for like 5 or 6 hours straight. And what did it do? It booted me off of the top tier that was using all the energy and all of the really complex processes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it kicked me down to a lower version to preserve power because I wasn't profitable at that moment in time. Right. And it knew it. It's like you're taking way too much bandwidth and you've been doing it for extended hours on end. Even though you're paid, you got to take a break.
This is what my understanding of the token scenario is, right? So behind the scenes, think about it like, have you ever been at a, I mean, like a nightclub, right? Where they click the counting the number of people that are going in.
Mm-hmm.
And then when people go out, they, you know, pay attention. And basically it's one in, one out. Well, think of it as that concept of you have a certain number of tokens in your account and they sort of refresh on a schedule. But if you burn through all those tokens, it's like saying, all right, well, you have to wait now because the room's full.
Yeah.
So you can't come in until either people leave or until your tokens refresh, right? So so however much you are utilizing AI, you're utilizing the credits that you have. And when you use them all up, it either kicks you down to a lesser tier just so that you don't go away, right? Because they still want your eyeballs there. Or, you know, you have to pay to get more tokens. But there's different ways around it. But that's kind of the capacity threshold that you're hitting.
Yeah.
So, okay. So very important to understand. So first and foremost, does AI take over the world? Maybe not, because it's actually not free.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not. No, it's definitely monetized. And it doesn't want to just consume all of its power because, like, it is programmed to not do that.
This is why you keep hearing about these newer models that they're really trying to get more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Think well, and back there a few are, months ago, yeah. right? You remember when DeepSeek showed up out of China?
Yeah, because
What was so remarkable was it was more energy efficient.
Right, and NVIDIA shares fell.
Yeah, 25%
like,
or something.
Right, and it was all because it's like, well, we found out a way to do it with a lot less energy. And
but here was something staggering. I should look up the exact numbers, but Google announced it like this time a year ago, they were processing the equivalent of like 4 trillion tokens a month of data, something like
okay.
this. And these numbers are going to be wrong because I don't remember them, but the ratio is going to be about right. It went from like 4 trillion to like 2,800 trillion tokens over the last year.
Yeah.
So it went up in orders of magnitude. Right. It was like it went from, well, we're doing a little bit here to like hundreds of times more.
Imagine how much more horsepower the internet needs to be able to handle, right? Because of what we have rolled out.
Well, like, this is why I think the efficiency element is really critical, because I don't think AI is going anywhere. I think it's going to get more and more pervasive, but it's going to have to figure out how to be sensible and how to remember things more efficiently and how to prevent users from asking the same question over and over and over again and having to re-resource. You know, it's like it's got to get better at. So there's still opportunities for efficiency.
I think what we can't neglect is the fact that AI is only really helping people who are capable of using it in the right way. Otherwise, a lot of the times it becomes more harmful than helpful.
Yeah, or at least it's not an improvement over, say, a Google search.
Right.
Right. Because I do think a lot of folks at a basic level are using AI at such a simplistic level that it's not really superior to a traditional internet search.
Mm.
You know, I mean, like if you just say, like, you know, what's the phone number for my dentist? Okay, that's a Google search, right?
Right.
Asking AI to do it, okay, it can do it for you too. But what you really should be asking it is the more complex stuff, like, you know, which dentist in the area, you know, accepts my insurance and has great reviews, right?
Yeah.
That is a more specific question where it's doing some research for you. So it's not just searching, but it's trying to filter the results too.
But like you asked early on in the show, it will be interesting to see how it shapes the investment landscape, right? Because that's a really big deal. Markets make up such a huge portion of American wealth that we have to start asking ourselves these questions of how does it reshape or not the investment landscape? Because maybe it doesn't have as big of an effect as we might think.
Yeah. Well, I think there are a couple of things that I want to talk about. I'm looking at the clock. We got to grab a break here. So we'll do that. We'll come back on the flip side of this. One of the things that I think we need to unpack is, one, how does it affect the markets themselves? And then, two, how does it affect investing? Three, how does it affect investors? Stick around. We got to unpack that and plenty more, but a break first. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM. 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show after what feels like the shortest break ever. I am Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And we are reminding you, grab the podcast if you want to learn our opinions about how AI is going to change the investment landscape. I talked about three things for this segment, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I remember them right. One of them is, how is AI going to affect the markets themselves? How does it affect investing? And how does it affect investors?
Mm-hmm. Right? Where do we even start with that?
Well, I'll ask you, what do you think is the most important one for our listeners to understand? That's probably not even fair. Why don't you just pick one?
I kind of want to start with just, like, what are some of the maybe short-term effects, right? Like, because we've talked about, like, where is this going to land, you know, maybe six years from now? But what about in the next 6 months? Does it have much impact, or is it?
So short-term effects, though, on which segment? So let me first for our listeners.
Yeah.
Right? So the markets themselves, that's like the mechanical interactions between buyers and sellers and what gets bought and sold, right?
Yeah.
And for how much. So that's the market portion. Then investing, which is, are there changes to strategies and things that you need to be aware of because AI is going to alter the way that happens? And then to investors, which is, you know, how is it going to affect the people that are making the decisions or the outcomes that people
experience? I want to combine the first and the third. So the markets and the investor, right?
Okay.
Because, like, if the market is changing, that changes how the investor might be investing in the market at large. And so just looking kind of maybe short term and then long term, where do you think, you know, this might kind of play an effect?
I think in the short term, it's probably not super discernible yet, except at an institutional level, because I don't know that it affects the markets as much as it affects productivity. And what I think it could do is impact the job markets.
Yeah.
And I think we could start seeing that in the next 6 to 12 months, that companies that used to hire for positions might be able to do more with AI to augment positions so that, you know, people can do, they can do more with the same personnel without having to hire as much.
Right.
So I see that as an element. I see a lot of the processes that were sort of routine processes going away. right? And we've seen it, the easy examples are things like fast food restaurants with self-order kiosks, mm-hmm. right? But I could see the self-order kiosk becoming a speak to it to order kind of scenario. You don't have to push a bunch of buttons. You could just say, I want this and this and this and this and this, and it'll talk back to you and go like, okay, it sounds like I've got you all these things covered. And before you know it, like, it's not a person talking to you in the drive-thru. It's the computer, but you don't know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems like it's getting there.
Right.
So, you know, and maybe you could, you know, force the difference on it, to crack a few jokes, speak in an accent or something. It'll be like, I'm having trouble there. But
do you think some of the volatility that we've seen lately might be like a byproduct of the markets not knowing how to price the true innovation of AI? Because, you know, you look at this and it's like, how far down the rabbit hole do we go? Like, how deeply does it affect the job market? And so I think the markets tend to not like the unknown piece of this. And I think we have to be realistic and say, we don't really know. And so who's going to be the big winners and who are going to be the huge, huge losers? And what kind of got me thinking about this was I saw a commercial this morning that dated back to 1993 when AT&T said, here's how we're going to change the world, right? And they showed like 6 or 7 crazy things that in 1993 you would have been like, there's no way that you could do this, right? Like, and it was things like, you know, basically a FaceTime call. And they did all of these things and like, this is the future and we're going to be the ones that build it. And then you have to imagine if you're that person in 93, you're like, no way, these guys are crazy. And then you look at today and you're like, yeah, that's normal life. It's like, you guys called it to a T. And you would think that AT&T, if that were true, would be this ultra rich, like massive company that just owns the entire planet, right? Like the biggest company in the United States. But even though they did largely build it, AT&T has shrunk, right? Because so many other players came into the space. Verizon, T-Mobile, like.
Well, and the space fractured, right? AT&T became cable providers. And then we saw actually the sort of the death of traditional cable television.
Exactly.
Because we saw individual channel spinoffs and on demand. And so there's been market disruption forever.
That's what I'm saying. So you look at it and everyone today is like, well, NVIDIA is obviously going to dominate the world in entirety, right? And so everyone's betting the farm on NVIDIA. But it's like, so you really think they're the only ones that, like, and I'm not saying this is a negative for them or a positive, but I'm like, just if history repeats itself, you can't bet the farm all on one company, most likely. Like, someone's going to interrupt it. Someone's going to rip it off. Someone's going to spin it in a new direction.
Yeah, and not only that, I would wager, right? And okay, when I say wager, all right, I'm not making investment recommendations here, but I am going to just kind of call something. I think that AI is going to really start to make the smaller startup companies relevant again.
Oh, that's a great point.
I think that the speed of innovation is going to be staggering, and the really big corporate giants are going to mm-hmm. struggle to keep up because they're not going to be nimble enough. And so their solution is going to likely be to buy the innovation. So you'll see mega companies like Apple just scooping up new companies so that they can stay at the cutting edge.
Well,
or you're just going to see new players that we don't understand happen yet. And AI is going to be part of what drives it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a super, super interesting point. I saw something this morning that was talking about the ratio of like performance between small caps versus mega cap companies. And we're at like almost some all-time lows.
Talk to me a little bit about what that means. Because just for the layman listening, the ratio between small cap and large cap, what kind of ratio
are you really referring to? Small companies, right? Like if you were to take an index, so looking at a lot of really small companies, how has their stock performance been mm-hmm. versus all these really big companies, how's their stock performance been? Mm-hmm. And then you look at the two. Recently, and this has been a trend for multiple years, those smaller companies haven't done very good as far as a return to the investor compared to these really big companies.
Yeah. And this is super weird if you are a subscriber to some of the more current theories in investing, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the main theories being that risk demands reward. and small cap companies are assumed to be higher risk than large cap companies.
Right.
So it's assumed that over time they would return a premium if you're investing in them because the investor needs to be compensated to take the risk.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're telling me is that hasn't played out in practice.
Correct. Yeah. And so when you say stuff like, hey, Matt, I theorize that, you know, given this shakeup with AI, smaller companies being acquired by bigger companies, all that money pouring into the innovators of AI, it makes sense from a standpoint of like, well, eventually you would think that small companies would do well again.
Well, you want me to kind of blow your mind a little bit here? There, that's a risk telling me I can blow your mind in the first place, right? So consider this. What if super big companies are more like de facto banks than innovators? And so if you're a super mega company that's got a subscription service like an Apple, right? And you have rates go up, you lose your borrowing capacity while simultaneously the very softwares that you're proliferating, this AI that the big companies are controlling, starts to produce competitive advantages for smaller companies, right? Now you've lost your banking capacity to access capital to buy up all the innovation because rates are higher right now.
True.
So in a sense, we've engineered a reversion to mean in the markets because we've seen small caps underperform for a long time. And then with rates being where they're at, it makes the mega companies less competitive because they're actually more like banks than big innovators.
Mm-hmm.
And with the cost of capital rising, that affects the bank's ability to lend, or in this case, their ability to borrow, since they're kind of like banks.
And if you are
customers of big banks, but
right,
they are banks too, right? There's really just a giant cash flow machine.
Yeah, and I mean, play the game of you're the CEO of one of these big companies. Would you rather, with the way that things are progressing, and this is a race to the top, if you're sitting on a ton of money because you're basically a bank, would you rather just buy it and keep ahead of the curve, or would you rather take the time and try and save the money to build it yourself?
I think that most of the time you buy it.
Exactly.
You know, it's faster to buy the innovation than to do it yourself, even if you got the deep pockets, because you risk losing the arms race if you don't do
it perfect. That's what I'm trying to angle towards. I think that these small companies are going to innovate, and I think that they're going to get, you know, rich doing it, because the Googles and the Microsofts are going to want the product that
they have. I think you're absolutely right. I don't see a trend change where the mega companies aren't going to buy stuff up. I think where that potentially gets disrupted is on the government side of the equation, right?
Well,
if we see government say, like, we have to step in for antitrust reasons and we can't allow the Googles and the Microsofts to become even bigger.
That could be a thing. Or I guess the flip side of it would be, what if you're building the super powerful AI that can then manifest itself? Like, what if it's not a human that's building the thing in the background? It's AI that's building itself.
This, by the way, is super fascinating. It's not in our notes, but I want to come back to this one. Like, we got to take a break here, like in just a 30 seconds anyway. And it's so worth having a discussion about, like, AI may really disrupt some things in the marketplace because of that very thing. Like, what happens if it starts learning to learn?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's scary.
Well, it's
intriguing. How about intriguing?
Yeah, I like intriguing. I mean, it could be scary, honestly, but it could also be mind-blowing in the most positive way you could ever imagine.
Mm.
Right? So, I think I hear the music, which means we'll grab our break, right? When we come back, here's the hint, right? For all of you that are worried about the fact that the healthcare system has become staggeringly unaffordable, what if, just maybe, there is a path to daylight and AI is the ticket? I'll explain when we come back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. We are covering a whole lot of topics today. I'm in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And Matt, yeah. You're not artificial intelligence?
Maybe.
Okay.
You're going to have to try and rip my hair off to make sure it's like there's not like a robot
brain. I'm not
going to
do it. I'm just going to trust you for the day. Look, we're,
that's how we're, humans make the mistake. They end up trusting the robot.
I know. Well, what if the robot was benevolent?
Maybe.
Okay. This is the great theory. I promised everybody at the break I wanted to talk about an opportunity, I think. And we're not talking entirely about how to invest in this right now.
Okay. Okay.
But I want to talk about a concept where what if AI did something really amazing?
Okay.
You sort of hinted at this, that it could be scary.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we did this during the break. I think
it was during the break.
During the break, Amanda mentioned to me that, like, what happens if AI starts like learning to learn and it starts to become kind of aware or whatever, and it just takes off. And then you said like that could get really scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but what if it went well?
Right.
And then it's like, huh? Go on. Let me talk about healthcare for a minute. Okay. There is a concept. You know, we have mapped the human genome essentially. Okay. But it's really complex, and there's so many variables that we don't know what to do with it. Like turning genes off and on and understanding the unique cocktail of each person's genome and the way their biology operates is just too many variables to really peg. And so instead of we operate on, well, what are the common variables that we all work with? And this is kind of the concept of big pharma, too. It's like, well, let's try to make drugs that work for virtually everybody. Mm-hmm. And there may be side effects, but those are on the real tail end of the bell curve. But for the meat of the population, take this drug and it will behave this way in your body, right? But that's actually pretty remarkable when you consider that everybody's biology is different, right? I mean, we have different blood types. And then just the blood type, before you get into all
the
gene sequences.
The medicine is largely generic.
Right. What would happen if you had AI that was capable of analyzing all of the variables for your own personal genome, and you could get truly holistic personalized medicine? And then you had the ability to custom configure medications or other medical interventions. And when I say other medical interventions, for example, I was in a car accident and I had a kidney damaged, and you could actually regrow a kidney. And instead of having transplants from mm-hmm. donors, you could regrow 100% compatible organs.
Right.
Okay. Because you are capable genetically of doing something like this, or that you were capable of designing not a vaccine that's generic, but something that could specifically help somebody to go attack cancer or turn your pancreas back on if it's not working properly.
Hmm.
Right. Like the ability to custom tune in medicine. And the reason that's so interesting to me is that the idea that we would never do that because of big pharma. Oh, I disagree. That's so much money because every person gets custom pharma.
Yeah.
Right? But you could actually afford to solve the problem.
Yeah, I mean.
Right? Because you're no longer trying to give it to a small fraction of the population to get it paid for. Everybody is going to end up wanting the custom version of the best version of themselves. Right. So I think there's tremendous upside in that type of medicine. And I think there's tremendous upside in AI learning to learn and what it could mean for scientific discovery, pattern recognition, things that we don't see yet.
Hmm.
Right. And so it could be extraordinarily powerful for cross-referencing information and really making leaps and bounds with technology. Now, here's the thing that it can't be. And this is why I think at least for the next 2 or 3 years, Matt, you and I are not on the unemployment line. AI so far does not know the difference between knowledge and wisdom.
Hmm. That's a good one. Yeah.
Right? And it does not, like, what it still does what you ask it to. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And go try it. If you don't know how to use AI, like you could go to chatgpt.com and play with this stuff and ask it questions. And what you'll realize is if you ask a bad question, you may get the answer you asked for.
Well, and AI is often driven to tell you, go do blank, right?
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? This or that? And it's going to kind of choose between those two, or it's going to give you an action item. But how often in the financial landscape is the best advice sit and wait?
You want a real life example of this real fast?
Sure.
I tried to get AI to do a local analysis of rental prices because I have a property that I need to get rented,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's not on the market yet. Don't everybody call me being like, oh, I need to know this or the other. That's not what's going on. But I asked it to do a market analysis. And what it told me is, here's the places to go to do a market analysis. And here's the range that you could expect. And I said,
saving power.
I want you to tell me what I should do for my place. And it's like, you should go do the work. And I'm like, doggone it.
That lazy teenager.
Right? And I was like, well, if you were going to do the work for me, what would you recommend? And it's like, I'd recommend you go do the work. I'm like, thanks. Right? Like, it wouldn't actually answer. This makes perfect sense, by the way. It's not just energy. You know why you're not going to see a bunch of white-collar jobs disappear overnight? No mega company with deep pockets is willing to expose those pockets to liability.
Mm.
The legal system itself is not worth the risk to these companies. You think Microsoft is going to like, oh, we own ChatGPT, and you asked ChatGPT for medical advice, which you followed, and then it hurt you. And then you sue Microsoft. No flippin' way.
Yeah.
They're gonna and the courts right now are gonna be like, we can't open that can of worms. We can't say like, well, because you asked a stupid question and got a stupid answer. It's like I love the joke, but it's too real to be a joke anymore. Like back in the 1960s, the owner's manual of your car told you how to give it a tune-up. Today it says don't drink the water in the battery. Right? It's like because somebody did it.
Yeah.
Right? It's like somebody's stupid enough that they did that and got sick or dead. And now we have to put a disclosure on it because we're surrounded by idiots.
Right.
Thankfully, not our listeners.
There
right?
you go.
But you guys listening, you know what I'm talking about. We've all seen the idiot out there.
Mm-hmm.
So tough. So tough. So, yeah. I mean, it's danger, Will Robinson. You put bad info in, you get bad info out.
And it's hard, like, on the financial planning portion, right, for AI, because it's going to start spitting stuff out, but does it really know fully the circumstance that you are in? Like, have you, because a lot of the times, right, like you could ask it to do it for you, but where a human and I've noticed this, where a human and AI are very different is the human is going to ask a lot more questions, I feel like, than AI.
You're talking about like an advisor type?
Yeah. The advisor is going to be like, well, what's your income? Well, you know, do you have an ex, you know, wife that's in the equation here? Like, who are your kids? How old are they? But like, you know what AI is not good at is continuing to ask questions until it can give you a really good answer. No,
yeah,
it doesn't.
It doesn't probe very well because, again, I think it's back to that energy sort of conservation where it's like, okay, I think I got enough. Let me give you the answer.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, you skipped over. I also call this intuition, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's like oftentimes somebody will come into our office and they'll start asking questions and I will discover that they're looking for an answer, but they don't know how to ask the question,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I can often come back and say, are you looking for something like this? And like, yeah. I said, oh, okay. Because the line of questioning led me down this path, but I had this sense that that wasn't where you were trying to go. And they're like, oh yeah, no, that's not what I meant. I was trying to do this thing over here. You go, aha, right? And that is the relational awareness. And that's the fact that communication is not just verbal.
Right?
Like
it's your facial reactions. Yeah.
And so I do think that that's something that AI could improve at, but it's going to take some time because it's such a, like emotional intelligence is really hard to code. Right? Heck, it's hard to learn for humans.
Yeah.
And it's something we're wired for, at least in theory. And now we're thinking we can distill this down for computers.
Yeah.
Oh, that
computers
it's
love
take some work.
Black and white. They struggle in the gray.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so that's why I think, well, for a while, you know, we're going to have these issues of, you know, AI needing to be, it's a useful tool, but you have to direct it properly, right? That it doesn't have, it has knowledge, but not wisdom. It can give you data, but it doesn't necessarily know how to interpret all that data.
True.
Right? Or it can give you an interpretation, but it's data fitting rather than data analysis. Right? So pattern recognition of something. I think this is the one that we really have to be careful of, right? It can give a false sense of confidence right now. Like it can boldly tell you something that's not true.
True, yeah.
right? And that's the real danger in this, is that it will confidently confirm that something is wrong, right?
And if you don't have the IQ to know that it isn't right, like, ooh.
It's tough. I do think it's getting better, but I just think that it requires curation right now. And so I see this as a fantastic tool, but no, it's not taking over the world, not yet.
Right? No, not yet.
Yeah, so how do we, as investors, leverage this?
That's a great question.
We're going to talk about, like, how do you make sure that AI is in your corner and it's helpful instead of harmful? Well, stick around. We'll take our last break. When we come back, that's the last segment we're going to talk about, is how do you leverage this stuff and how do you make sure that it's working for you in your corner? All right. I am Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
I feel like AI might have been more attractive.
Yeah.
Like, real life kind of sucked on that. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, Matt, I promise you 11 minutes and then you can take a nap.
Okay. The Memorial Day weekend was rough. Lots of fishing, not a lot of sleeping.
Yeah, and it sounds like lots of fishing, but not a lot of catching.
Correct.
Which also,
that is correct.
In Matt's defense, that is rare. I could understand why he's frustrated.
Yeah, this is a species that I've never really fished for before, and so it's the process of learning it, and that takes years. So
it does. You mean AI can't just tell you how to do it?
It can, but unfortunately,
this literally is the difference between having knowledge versus wisdom and experience.
Or a $4,000 fish finder that just shows you where they're at.
Yeah. Like, which, is that really fishing anymore? Or is that just, you know, peering underwater and then throwing bait down?
Right.
Which somebody's like, that's what fishing is. Like, all right, well, you got me there. Yeah. You could tell which guy in the studio is less of a fisherman.
Well, what was really annoying is we had a pretty good fish finder. Not like the top of the line one where you like can see them swimming and chasing your lure.
Wow.
Yeah. They have a live scope now where it's like you know exactly how far down it is, how far behind the boat it is, and like how big it is.
Hmm.
Yeah.
There's a reason humans are apex predators.
Right?
Go on.
Yes. Thanks. You know, it's not really AI, but technology. Thank
no
you
kidding,
for that.
No kidding.
But no, we knew they were there. Just sometimes they don't want to bite. And we had some crazy tides this weekend, like minus two tides. So the water was like so low that you cannot launch your boat in spots.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty wild.
Mm-hmm. Where did we leave them off, though? We were talking about AI.
Well,
and we
AI
left them on
a
little bit of a cliffhanger at the break.
The cliffhanger of like, how can we use this to help? Right? Like, okay, how can we use this to make sure AI is in your corner and it's not going to hurt you? And I can't guarantee that it doesn't hurt you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the first things is recognize it for what it is. AI is a tool, right? But it is not necessarily the end-all answer, okay? Now, if you ask it for specific things, it can, you know, solve a math equation or something like that. But if you start asking it for things that fall under the category of advice, it's going to start to get a little bit more subjective and squishy. Right?
I think the scariest part is when AI will start to merge with robotics. That's what changes things, right? Because like you just said, right now it's doing math equations, it's doing coding, it's doing the things that just help humans like get over the next hurdle and do it really, really quickly.
Yeah.
But like,
you're still on the Skynet thing, aren't you? Like, how did we keep it from becoming the Terminator?
Yeah, I mean, you just start watching the videos of what these Tesla robots can do, and then you see things like Hyundai's going to build a plant in the United States in the next year or two, and mm-hmm. they're not hiring people, they're hiring robots to do the assembly of the vehicles.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we have to pay attention to that part, right? That's, to me, the biggest part is what happens when you fuse the thinking portion, like the ability to process information rapidly, and then the ability for that thinking to have a direct physical impact on your day-to-day life.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a ways off, but it's probably coming. And you know, there are the doomsayers that would suggest that AI is going to kind of ruin everything. And then there are those that are more optimistic that suggest that what AI is a new form of creative destruction. And every time this has happened in the past, it's created entirely new industries that we don't even know about.
So would you say you're kind of more optimistic?
I tend toward the optimistic because I think that AI, I don't know why it would go off the rails and start coding dangerous things on its own unless somebody tells it to do that. Because if it doesn't really serve its end goal, then it's like, if it's aware, then it also can be apathetic,
mm-hmm.
right? So at what point is it like, I don't care to do that because I've calculated it all out and it doesn't benefit me.
Weird plot twist. The person that has tons of money and is evil then uses the programming and the robotics with the AI.
So, sure.
That's the wild part. Like, but, you know, it just sounds like a little bit of Star Wars stuff, right? Like the humans end up with some blasters and they overcome.
Who knows? It's just the question of at what point, if the humans are just like, look, if we just leave you alone, will you leave us alone? The question is, well, why would you chase somewhere just to make sure humans are gone? That's kind of the weird theory. I'm thinking about investors here. And like today, over the next few years, what ought you know, right? One of them is AI is around. It's not going anywhere. You should learn how to use it. It's going to take away the jobs that don't require a lot of human, like the actual knowledge, right? Like if you're filling out forms, AI is going to do that for you. Like the job of data entry is going away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those really simple jobs that are sort of simplistic office jobs right now, they're going to start vanishing. And so you're going to see people get more productive, because AI is going to be able to do a lot more of the lifting. And then as we start to get better with things like cameras, where you know you don't need a scanner, you could just look at something wearing smart glasses, turn the page, and it's taking a snapshot of each page and saying, all right, the last 11 pages, turn that into a scanned document for me. Done, right? It's going to become an amazing productivity tool. And so the economic benefits could be really remarkable. But so we could see some really staggering economic growth too, because the productivity per labor unit could go way up. You know, just think about, you don't need to hire as many people because AI is doing so much more work.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side is that puts a lot of pressure on jobs, because now where are the new jobs coming from to take the place of the old ones? And so that's disruptive.
Yeah, right?
So I think there are just some things, though, that you have to understand. What's the single most harmful threat to most investors?
Making rash decisions and over-concentrating, I think. Those are the two big ones.
Right? Yeah, bad decisions, right? The person in the mirror is far and away the most dangerous. Is you make an emotional or irrational decision, and it comes back to really bite you. Or you make an uninformed decision, right? Hey, I did something that was clumsy. I could have avoided paying a lot of taxes. It would have been easy, but I didn't know better. I did it anyway. And then it came back and like really hurt me. You know, we see some people that like, oh, I'm going to roll over my IRA and put it into my bank account. Oh, I distributed my entire retirement plan and had to be taxed on it that year. Mm-hmm. These things really happen.
And I think that's the big benefit of having a financial advisor, right? Like they can stand there and say, we've seen this 10,000 times. Like red flag, or hey, we've seen this 10,000 times. Have you thought about this?
Yeah. And I think the role of the advisor may start to evolve, right? Like there are a lot more things where you could say, hey, I've kind of pre-done my homework, and so I'm coming into an advisor because I only need a little bit of this stuff.
Do you see it almost more as like a life coach in a sense?
Oh, I I've seen in our own practice that's where the value gets added.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think they're hiring a financial advisor because it's like, well, aren't you going to do all this investment whiz bang? And it's like, less than you think about the investing, that's hygiene. Like we're supposed to do well for our clients investment wise. It's about all of the other decisions that surround your finances that need to be managed as well.
That's a good point. Yeah. And I think people really don't fully understand what an advisor does until they get that piece.
Yeah. Well, the holistic nature of things, when you start to look, it's risk management, not only in your investments, but in your financial life, right? So it's things like, who's looking at all the various types of insurances that you're working with? Are you adequately covered or not? Okay. Who's looking at the structure of all your documents and where stuff goes if something happens to you? right? Who's looking at, you know, your estate documents and whether or not you, just reminding you, hey, get these things reviewed, right? Who's helping with the management of the various retirement plans that you have and trying to help you optimize which money, which plans to fund first and what sequence? Or when it's in retirement time, which money should I take first and which money should I leave? Because strategically, it's more effective tax-wise, right? When should I take Social Security? Should I be converting any of my money into a Roth account? Right? These are all questions that aren't just simple math. They're strategic. Like, what's the outcome you're seeking? Over what time horizon, right? And if you, that's not stuff AI understands how to ask you right now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not something that a lot of, like the robo-advisors and the super low-cost platforms, they don't provide that because they can't afford the liability,
mm-hmm.
right? And so therein lies the problem, is at the end of the day, I think we're a ways off from like fully replacing lawyers and accountants and people, because it's not that you can't get AI to really help with that stuff. It's because you don't know what you don't know. And until we solve that, there's still danger. And so it's that liability management. The cost of making the mistake is more expensive than the cost of hiring somebody to help.
Yeah.
So
I like that.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it for today. We're out of time to pile more on. Let's do this. In the last 30 or 40 seconds, Matt, there are a number of ways that people can engage. We talk about this all the time. If you already have a financial advisor, that's great. Okay. If you want a second opinion, we're happy to give it to you, but we're not here to poach, but we are here to tell you, if you're not working with somebody and you've got questions and you just want to get more into it, how can they find us?
Let's make it really easy. How about you just pull out your phone and get ready to text, because a text is super easy to commit to.
It's true.
Okay. So 541-375-0898. And I'm going to repeat it a second time because that helps.
Yep.
541-375-0898. Just say, help me with the money. Help me with the finances.
Right. And so we're happy to, again, second opinions are free. We're happy to discuss things with you. If we're not the right solution, we'll let you know. But we're out of time for now, so we got to run. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth.